All right, Charlie Arnton with Glenn.
And John, and 2 weeks in a row.
2 weeks in a row now. Look at you, buddy. It's got to be a record.
Yeah, John, for sure.
Yeah, John. John's excited. He's excited. And you're not going to be gone anymore this year.
Nope. Pretty excited
about that. So. Also, you guys can't see us on video. But we still have Steven is still with us from last week as well.
Yeah.
Because we are indeed coming to you.
In the future.
From the past.
During the present.
In the present. That's correct. All right. Pre-recorded show today, guys, from the AR-500 Armor Studio. A big thanks to them for taking care of us and helping us out with a place to do the show as we make our big move up to the new facility for our training stuff. Remember, you guys, if you're a patron, you're missing out if you're not hitting up the extra opportunities that we provide you. The show reviews, the blog stuff that Ryan puts up, you're missing out. It's a lot of extra content that's getting put up there. Also, if you're not getting the extra shows that we do every month, we did that last week. So make sure that you check that out if you are a $10 and above patron. That way you're getting the extra show. And if you have show ideas, like there's something you want to hear about and you're not sharing with us, you're missing out on another opportunity to be more involved with your patronage. So give us your show ideas. The majority of our shows come from our patron show ideas, the things that you guys want to listen to, the things you want to hear about, the guests that you want us to have on here, the topics you want us to discuss, etc. All right. As usual, we don't really have any news to discuss because it's in the future.
Let's try to tell the future, see if we can make some stuff.
Oh, yeah, tell the future. Politicians are still corrupt.
Mm. Someone killed someone.
Some bad guy killed
with a hammer.
People. With a hammer, which is almost a positive or almost an absolute.
Maybe pressure cooker. Pressure cookers are coming back.
Pressure cookers coming back?
Yeah.
Bring a pressure cooker back. Yeah, okay.
That's not good.
All right.
You guys didn't see that? I think it was like multiple pressure cookies. Oh my god!
Pressure cookers.
That were found. I think it was like in the subway or something like that.
No, I did not see that.
No, John's now interested though.
I'm super fucking interested.
Things to blow up.
It's gonna be hot in Phoenix next week.
Yeah.
It's gonna be hot. Phoenix. Still gonna be hot.
Yep. It's gonna be
maybe,
hot. Phoenix.
Maybe we'll actually get monsoon season.
That would be nice.
Yeah. You see the whole everyone wash the car on the same day to bring monsoon season?
True story. Actually, it doesn't bring monsoons. It just brings a giant freaking dust storm. That's what happens when you wash your car. Yeah, a drizzle and a dust storm. That way your car just looks like worse than it did before you washed it. Yeah, that's why I'm on the never-ending quest to not wash my truck. Yeah.
I super have to
New York. New York City trans hub evacuated after two rice cookers found.
Two rice cookers, not the same thing as pressure cooker.
That's different than a pressure cooker. Come on, Ryan. That's my fault. Get your cooking things together, man.
Sorry.
I'm way less interested now.
What's more dangerous than John, a rice cooker or a pressure cooker?
It depends on what's inside it.
Well, isn't that always true?
Oh, wait.
It's what's on the inside.
Rice cookers aren't really too pressurized.
John,
maybe rice.
It's what's always on the inside that counts.
That's not true. There are times when what's on the inside does not matter. It's all about the exterior.
Sometimes. You are one shallow person.
So wait, can a rice cooker not become a bomb?
Oh, sure. Anything. I could turn this rockstar can into a bomb.
You know what I mean.
Yeah, but because pressure cookers would be
with an explosion, better. You need pressure. That's hence the pressure cooker. So does a rice cooker create the same thing?
No.
Because you can just put explosives in a rice cooker and it's a vessel.
Yeah, well, that's all they're doing with the pressure cookers. They're not actually cooking things in them when they turn them into explosives.
Then what makes them worse? I thought they were pressurizing the contents inside and that was amplifying the explosion.
No. It's
I mean, obviously
heavier,
they're not plugged in currently.
It's a heavier case and it holds
more. So it's just like the ceramic that they're hoping for?
It pushes a little bit harder, but it's not. It's still a casing.
Huh. That's boring.
This news story sucks, Ryan.
God damn it.
Damn it, Bobby.
All right, I'm editing this out.
Oh, no. You got to leave this in.
There's a little bit of education in there for people.
There was a little bit of education.
I, for some reason, thought that they were using the pressure cooker. Oh, my. I'm done.
Pressure cooker, buddy.
Stop while you're behind.
Stay in it. All right. Redwire gear moment, go.
So keep your trauma kits and your boo-boo kits separate.
Okay.
So 3 weeks ago now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, ish. Anyhow, so I've been carrying around a med kit for a long time. Never really had to use it. While I was on my last military travels, there was an accident. A guy fell down and tried to arrest his fall with a beer bottle in his hand. That was a really bad op. And no one else had any idea what to do. And when he first stood up, he's like, no, it's fine. And immediately I realized that it was not fine. So I was able to get him cleaned up and bandaged, and they sent him to the hospital. He ended up with 10 stitches in his hand, in the palm of his hand.
That was a good photo you sent me, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So keep your trauma stuff and your boo-boo stuff separate. I mean, it wasn't a big deal. No light, no threat of loss of life there. So I just took my gauze, packed it on there, wrapped it up nice and tight, sent him on to the hospital.
Good.
So keep your stuff separate, but always keep your stuff with you.
Redwire Gear Moment brought to you by RedwireGear.com. All right, you guys, today we're going to be talking about ARs
stupid myths
versus AKs and why debating these things is kind of silly. And I have my own ideas on why this is. And of course, as I mentioned already, we've got Stephen Powell from C2 Tactical and Patriot Outdoors still in the studio with us. And so I'd love to hear his opinion on some of these things. We've got Ryan over there who's looks like he's just in La La Land right now.
I think he's downloading on Bonnet. Yeah.
He's trying to learn how to say pressure cooker.
She's working over
pressure it. Cooker, pressure he's, cooker, pressure cooker.
He's sounding things out.
He's going to beat the shit out of me.
All right. So
I'm just a soundboard guy. Leave me alone.
So we'll be discussing that, I guess. I don't know. Hook it on Pahonix.
Hook it on Pahonix. It works for me.
All right. So ARs versus AKs. So here, let's just start with that debate and just get it out of the
way.
Why? Look, here's the debate. There is no debate. All right.
Wait.
This is apples and oranges, man. All right. Mm. Here's why it's apples and oranges. You're talking about two different platforms that operate in two different ways and generically fire two different cartridges, right?
Well, yeah, that's a statement of fact.
It's not a statement of fact because I can have an AR-15 that fires 300 blackout.
You're right.
I have an AR-15 that fires 22 long rifle. Okay. I have an AR-15 that fires a number of different calibers.
Okay.
I have AKs that fire different calibers. I have an AK-74 that fires, 5.45.
Yeah, yeah.
I've got an AK-22 that fires 22 long rifle. You know what I mean?
These arguments, the people are debating two things. They're debating 5.56 and 7.62x39.
Which is a totally that's ridiculous. So,
exactly.
Which one would I want more? Well, what's the application?
There's my phrase, in context.
What's the context of my application?
Context?
Yeah. Can you handle the appropriate firearm? I mean, if I'm talking about
that's
a home defense, if I'm talking about a home defense scenario, how am I going to be portrayed? Right? So I mean, think of it from that perspective. Okay, an AR is a firearm in common use by good guys. An AK is a firearm in common use by bad guys. So I'm not going to defend my home per se with an AK-47 because that doesn't in the eyes of a person who doesn't think, act, look, or live like me, how
which
am I
portrayed? Which is everyone, by the way, in case anyone's curious. That's
which is a lot of people, all right? How does an AK portray me? Does it portray me like a responsible, intelligent, mature adult? Is that what I'm going to look like in a courtroom when someone goes, if someone holds up an AK-47 with a 30-round banana clip, right? And everyone's like, oh my God, an assault rifle. That is like the typical gun that people think of when they think of quote unquote an assault rifle or an assault weapon, which is not a real term. But the idea is an AK, how does that make me look, and perception is everything when I'm trying to defend my actions against a court or against something like that. Now, from a standpoint of basic, ballistics, yeah, man, I'd rather slam a 30 caliber into someone's chest than a 5.56 into someone's chest.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah. It's nice to have an AR because it's going to be lighter weight. It's easier to hand off to someone else. I can hand it off to a smaller framed person, even a kid. It's a lot easier to handle. It's the manipulation of the AK and the AR are entirely different. And then people start talking about reliability. And it's like, why are we even talking about the reliability of these two great platforms? They are both, if made properly and maintained appropriately,
well proven to be
perfectly reliable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True. But you can fill one with mud. Are you filling it with mud in your fucking living room? I don't understand. Why is that an important thing? But you could throw it off the building. Like, is that what you do? Do you throw your shit off the building? Why are we discussing these points of reliability? Well, I saw on a YouTube video they drove a little truck over it.
Now, if you can drive a truck and throw an optic off a building, that's cool. But if we're talking about an AK or
a weapons platform,
why are you doing that? I get it. They're both reliable platforms when used under the normal conditions of the majority of people out there. And even if you were going to take it overseas, even these things being used in combat operations. I mean, look, here's the facts, man. There was never really a time. There's not really a time where you don't have enough opportunity to appropriately maintain your firearm to keep it in operational condition. Even in the middle of an oh my god gunfight, if you're talking about a large element gunfight and not like a close quarters gunfight, you have a few seconds, a moment when you're taking cover, taking your tactical pause, so to speak, communicating and doing that to open up that freaking bolt, slam a whole bunch of freaking lube in there, slam that bolt back, and dude, you're good for another 1,000. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't, it's not that big of a deal.
That's why the Mod Deuce comes with the 55-gallon drum of lube that sits right next to it. So you could just pump it in while you're shooting.
I always argued that the Mod Deuce requires two AGs. One AG to load and one AG to just spray lube in the action. There should be one just spraying lube in the action. Terrible. That thing is the hottest, nastiest gun
ever. We called it Monkey Nut. It's like LSA and CLP put together.
Yeah, really?
Oh, it's
I know LSA is phenomenal for like Mark 19s and Mod Deuces.
Fantastic. Yeah, it's so if you just use the LSA by itself, it can get gunked up, so then you put CLP.
And it kind of smooths it out a little bit so it doesn't get... Mm. Yeah, that LSA kind of coagulates a little bit. It would like jam up into the action and stuff like
but
that.
But the Mark 19 is a clean gun. Like when you shoot it, it's not going to build up carbon and all that.
Well, because of the way it's firing the cartridge.
Right, that's what I mean.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that Mobil 1 synthetic for high viscosity for small boat engines. We've seen the team guys roll through and... That's what they were using. I don't know if that was just them or if that's a corporate thing.
I've known people that use like transmission fluid and like brake fluid and stuff like that because how it reacts under heat.
Yeah.
I never had the need. Like the stuff that the LSA and the Monkey Nut and
it comes to splitting hairs. I mean, most guys, they're going to go to the range. They're going to shoot for an hour, an hour and a half. Or they're going to run a course in a day. They're going to shoot, 350, maybe 500 in a day max.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, even soft guys, when we're teaching them, they're going to shoot maybe 400, 500 rounds in a day.
Mm-hmm.
Now, tactical combat operation, I mean, obviously they're going to shoot potentially more.
But. You might be shooting more, but even then, like even in a quote-unquote combat operation, like when you look at the average number of rounds fired, it's very uncommon, with the exception of a few like literally historical and notable battles in our current environments, we'll say Afghanistan, Iraq, with the exception of some notable multi-day engagements, the majority of engagements, most people are not going through a combat load of ammunition, you know, because they're just, that's not all you're doing. And so unfortunately, a lot of people who are debating this kind of shit, that they're just thinking like, I'm just constantly shooting us. Ah, man, we're shooting.
They're thinking Tears of the Sun, bro.
Exactly. Dude, we're shooting, we're moving, we're taking cover, we're communicating, we're calling in air support, we're coordinating. This is a multi-hour operation that most people, let's say an airsoft fight, are going to be done in 5 minutes. What it takes them 5 minutes to do in an airsoft fight, it takes 5 hours to do in the real world because there's so many more facets of what's actually going on when you're looking at a total battle space and not an enclosed space. An enclosed space is an entirely different ballgame. But even then, I mean, do you ever go through a full combat load inside of a building?
Never.
No fucking way.
That'd be a bad fucking day.
It would be a horrible day. You are pinned down
especially
in a room.
The sizes of the buildings in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah, right.
That's a bad fucking
slightly larger than this studio.
I was going to say, you're talking about 2 to 3 rooms on average and... Yeah, what are you doing?
I've only been resupplied on mission when we actually needed it once. We were in essentially like a 22-hour firefight.
Mm-hmm.
But we set up a patrol base on top of our where our support by fire OP was. So you go back and you do whatever type of maintenance you needed to while another squad was out doing their business. Yeah. So, there's priorities of work.
Sure.
So I never once had any malfunction with my weapon. Yeah, it wouldn't count as a.
That's because you didn't run the 60, my friend.
It's true. I didn't run the pig. No.
Well, when you look again, and I'm talking about notable things, like when you look at prolonged engagement, Roberts Ridge or Haditha Dam or Fallujah or things like that, where people are embedded for multi days, multi hours. Now you're talking about guys who are having problems with their guns because they're too gunked up and they may not be able to. You know, they're breaking gear. They're breaking equipment because they're overutilizing it in an incredibly harsh condition.
It also depends on
the elements.
It also depends on the elements. Like if you're in multiple engagements inside of a house in Afghanistan, you're going to have a much larger issue of a malfunction because of all the dust that gets kicked up from the overpressure from your barrel. The roofs, the ceiling, I mean the ceiling, the floors, the walls is made out of fucking mud.
It's all dirt.
Right.
It's mud and dirt. So it's going to kick up and it's going to get inside that ejection port on onto your bolt carrier. Now, if you're outside, you have less of a risk. If you didn't arrive on a helo, you have less of a risk because mm-hmm. that helo is going to kick up the brown.
Yeah, brown out like bad. So, first of all, that's out of the way, I think. Look, man, mm-hmm. it's context. It's application. You can do the same thing with 9mm versus 45.
Oh, God.
You do the same thing with M193 versus M855. I mean, these debates.
I think the 9mm won the contest now, right?
Oh, yeah.
I think at this point.
So. Pretty much.
With all the data that's out there right now.
Well, that 2014 9mm justification report put out by the DOJ.
Yeah.
Or the FBI report.
It was the FBI, yeah.
That just really fleshed it out. A 30-year case study. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you haven't looked at that, it's an 88-page document. Please go look it up if you want to chew on something or read something while you're in the bathroom.
It's good. Basically, come down to 9mm wins.
Yeah.
Well, what the big comparison for the DOJ was actually 9mm versus 40 caliber. That was That was their big thing because what ended up happening with 40 caliber is, of course, 40 caliber was released when 9mm was still really anemic, and it was anemic because there really hadn't been a lot of development done on 9mm, and they wanted something that had capacity of 9mm, but the quote-unquote stopping power of 45, because we hadn't really done a lot of terminal ballistic study, mm-hmm. and the way that terminal ballistic study was being done was like fucking retarded, and so it didn't even make any sense the way that we were actually looking at things like back in the 80s. When 9mm was being considered, and then 40 really became popular like in the late 80s, early 90s.
Well, you're missing one element, though, or you just didn't want to talk about it, was the Miami Bank shootout of 1986 and the 10mm.
Yep, the Miami-Dade shootout was freaking bananas, right?
Yeah.
And so a big part of the 40 caliber problem over the years is that now we have an issue of we're stress fracturing wrists because of the way that the recoil is being transferred into the hand. Like, look, man, there is science behind this stuff. So we have stress fractures in law enforcement officers and recreational shooters and competitive shooters. We're looking at reduced terminal performance in 40 cal as opposed to what we were hoping we were going to get, which is actually increased terminal performance. Yeah. And so we've reduced the capacity of the magazine, switching away from 9mm, but we're still not getting the performance of 45, and instead we're actually getting worse performance than we were getting with 9mm once we brought 9mm up to the scientific plateau.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Plus, we're creating stress fractures in people over time.
Yeah. Well, the internal ballistics from 9mm to 40 cal from that report, according to I think they went with like 100, like it was like. It was
24 grain?
No, it was a bunch of trauma surgeons, and they talked about the internal ballistics, mm-hmm. and they couldn't see the difference.
There was no difference.
Yeah, because of the size, stopping power of the 40, and the speed, the velocity of the 9mm.
Yeah, it was nominal. You're talking about the wound cavities being nominal, the trauma being nominal, whether it's the hemorrhaging or the entrance wound, the whole temporary wound cavity and the permanent wound cavity that was just extremely, like, less than a quarter of an inch or whatever in diameter. Like, what's the difference? And now you've got 9mm. You've got 9mm that, back when I was a kid in the Air Force and even before that, 9mm, you're maybe pushing 300 foot-pounds of energy, at the most. And now you've got Corban and all these other rounds out there. They're pushing 488 foot-pounds of energy out of a 9mm, 124 grain. Mm-hmm. Right? And so you look at the average 165, 180 grain 40 caliber, which is pushing, in the 400s, mm-hmm. up to 490 or 500, maybe 500 with 357 SIG.
Look at 45 ACP 230 grain. Same.
Exactly.
Why is it the same? Because it's got the heavier projectile.
Yep.
But it doesn't have the speed.
Exactly.
It's just speed and velocity issue, or a velocity and weight issue, always has been.
Right.
You look at caliber difference, people always go like, well, 45 ball may not expand, but it don't get no smaller, and stuff like that. And you go, okay, just think about that for a second. A 9mm is 0.386, right? You're talking about literally less than 0.07 of a difference in caliber.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever someone starts that debate, I'm like, I'm sorry, I don't care who you are. I can't take you seriously anymore. I just can't take you seriously. Like, because of 0.07. And it's not even a full 0.07 because it's 45 and 0.386. We're talking about 0.064. Like, are you kidding me?
You're rounding up.
I don't
you're
even being generous. Care about this. Yeah. You know what I mean? And so, like, I remember when I first got into training, my dad told me this funny story because I was talking to my dad about keeping things in context, And I was like, yeah, but Dad, I'm trying to build this team because I don't want it to be, I don't want my experience to be like anecdotal. I don't want to be sharing things with people that don't make sense. I really want to make sure that I'm not that I can contextualize what I know into the average person. So my dad tells me this story. I think I told you this, John. I might have even told you this.
Yeah, you did. You told me.
And it still kind of cracks me up when I think about it. Because, you know, my dad's a super old school cowboy dude, you know, and he's a Vietnam veteran as well. And he was like, well, you know, I got to tell you a story. He said, when I was in Vietnam, you know, he's like, as you know, I carried, mostly he was either carrying a shotgun with number four buck mm-hmm. or he carried a Car 15. But he always carried in a shoulder holster a 45 because a lot of times he was tied up with the dogs. And so it was always easy to access. And it was kind of cool, actually, total side note, how they used to carry their Car 15s was they would front sling them across their shoulder with the front. They would front sling all the way up to the muzzle and then rear sling all the way just in front of the stock. So that they would hang them down so that the muzzle faced down on their right-hand side at their right-hand shooter so that literally they could reach down, grab that freaking grip, bring it up, and that sling, if you can imagine what I'm talking mm-hmm. about, would now go from the front of the gun over their left shoulder, back around behind him, and create so much tension that they would hip-fire everything to begin an engagement because a lot of times their hand was tied up with a dog.
Yeah.
So they would just flip that bad boy to freaking third position and just drain the first mag as they were bringing the gun to shoulder if they could let go of the dog. If they couldn't, then they would drain that as they were moving to cover, get into a position where they would either release the dog or they would bring it with them. So it was kind of a cool idea of like, you know, just like imagine like this cool Rambo action. But my old man always carried this pistol because he was like, that was always available. It's something I could always have. And so he was like, you know, I only ever used that pistol just the one time. You know, the rest of the time I had the shotgun in the Car 15. He's like, yeah, you know, we shot at some people a couple times. It was one time that I absolutely know that I did something. This guy was one hand tied up. Long gun was unavailable. And he's like, guy comes up in front of me. Very, very close quarters. He's like, I draw my pistol. I shot him once in the chest. Just one single time. You know, boom. It stopped the threat. And we were able to proceed. And he was like, so in my experience,
mm-hmm.
45 ball does drop them all. It was a 100% success rate. You know what I mean? He's like, I've shot one guy and it killed him.
And he died.
With one shot.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, now, the guy's also, you know, a very small Vietnamese guy. He's not very large stature. He was a very close contact shot. God knows what else was going
super
on.
Super malnourished.
And he's like, I'm pretty sure I shot him right in the heart. Like, there's a lot of things happened in that context. But... And he told me that story. Absolutely, not on meth. He definitely did not tell me that story to brag. It's not the context in which it was told. He was just telling me, like, look, based on my experience, that's that. Now he's joking about it because my dad doesn't believe that crap. He gives me a hard time now about it. But my old man switched to 9mm now because he's like, freaking holds more rounds and it's cheaper to shoot, you know. Yeah. But his whole point to telling me that story was like, this is how dangerous anecdotal information can be. So don't ever fall into this trap where something worked for you and now that's the thing. Explore all avenues. Explore all options. And that was a really important lesson to me to get from my dad and just kind of made sure I was in the right mind frame. I was already in that mind frame most of the time or most of the way anyways, but he just really helped solidify that. So really, you know, kind of interesting story. And again, was not told in any kind of braggadocious way or anything like that, but it was a good story to kind of keep things in context. The point being is that the majority of shit that you hear about ballistics – terminal performance, caliber, and all that is anecdotal at best.
Mm-hmm.
How many guys do you know who complained about 5.56? I know a lot of dudes who complained about M855 and 5.56. Man, I freaking drained a half a magazine in that dude and it didn't drop him. And you're like, where'd you hit him?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't know.
Well, I sprayed him with it, man. You should be dead. There's like 10, 15 rounds on that guy. And you're like, show me a dead body with 10 or 15 hits on it, mm-hmm. bro.
Mm-mm.
No way. You didn't get them. You think you were getting them. You weren't getting the hits. And then you look at terminal performance M855 on soft tissue. Look, it's not the best. But, I mean, it's a bullet.
I'd rather shoot 5.56 over 7.62 any day.
Why do you think that? Why do you say that?
Well, for one thing, my AR, I consider my home defense weapon.
Sure.
So I know that 5.56 has a higher chance of staying inside the body rather than a 7.62.
Sure. And inside the building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
to me, that's kind of the same as the 9mm and the 40. The 9mm and the 40, right? Any of the 7.62x39, you're looking at a significant recoil increase.
Right? Yeah,
harder to control.
My answer was going to be front sight return to target.
Yeah,
I don't care what platform you're talking about.
Yeah,
AK, AR, Glock, 1911.
Yeah.
Anything.
How fast can I snap that thing back into target?
Front sight return to target time. As you guys know, looking at your students and, you know, especially LE, because you see agencies swap. calibers and they swap weapon platforms. I'm sorry, gun platform, whatever you want to call it, their duty gun.
Yeah.
You go from, New Mexico State Police went from 357 SIG to 9mm, and you watched a bunch of jerking going on because they were so used to the incredible, the shock and awe of that 357, and they go to 9mm, and they don't have that as much, and they were still missing more than they were hitting when they were putting under pressure. It took them time.
Sure.
So, you know, to your point of 5.56 and the collateral damage mitigation with your 5.56 and the same thing with 9mm, it's all the same, man.
Yeah.
You know, front sight return to target time. The point is, nobody usually asks, hey, man, or it says, hey, I wish I had a bigger bullet. They always ask, I wish I had more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we suck. Yeah. We suck under pressure. You put us under enough pressure, we're going to suck. And so we have to put hits. Mm-hmm. And that front sight return to target time or floating your dot minimally is better.
Right. And I'll never talk shit about the AK. The AK is a beast, and it's fun to shoot.
But yeah, true.
That's what it is for me. Like, it's a fun gun.
Yeah.
Well, and operationally, again, it really depends on the context of the application.
I mean, if I'm
talking about?
Yeah, if I'm an SF guy, I'm going to carry an AK. Why? Because of
local resupply,
all
baby.
All the Afghans that I am with are carrying AKs.
Pick up mags anywhere I want.
Right. Yep.
That's why, like, when dudes we got the Mark 17s, the light and heavy model, and guys started carrying the Scar Heavy. And it's like, bro, you're out there. What you're carrying is all you have. Yep. One guy in one platoon carrying a Scar Heavy, terrible idea. Because once he's out of ammo, he's done. He can go break link, sure, but that takes a lot of time.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work. I've seen a couple ODAs with, you know, they're carrying three, but I think that's more rare.
The Scar Heavy?
Yeah.
Yeah, so once we've actually got the hang of it as far as, like, operationally, like, when we would need it and if we would need it, then it was usually one per squad.
Okay, yeah.
So there'd be four heavies out there.
Okay, that makes sense. Three or four, yeah.
But at first, there was just one heavy going out, and it's like, you're carrying it, just be cool, man.
Right.
Like, but you know what? You're bringing 7.62 inside of a house. And inside of a mud brick house.
Yeah.
And before we had Alpha 1, Green Tip wasn't going through mud brick. Alpha 1 is going through mud brick. So, again, it's like, what are we losing and what are we gaining?
I wish we still had M855A1.
It's being issued.
Yes, it's back.
It's being issued heavily.
Oh, yeah.
Is it back?
Yeah. It's back.
Okay.
They've handled that problem.
Yeah.
Back. Yep. I hadn't heard that.
Yep. Good to go.
They have a...
Dude, they have M80A1, bro.
Yeah.
7.62x51A1.
I've seen that.
Yeah.
It's
nasty.
Nasty.
Yeah. It's nasty.
It's nasty.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah. 7.62
nice.
Alpha 1 is some nasty shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. Actually, Mason was just their whole loadout now for 240 Bravos. All A1. Alpha 1. So.
It performs.
It performs way better in a belt fed as well.
Yeah.
Hmm. Just because
if it has the same type of terminal ballistics that the 855A1 has.
Oh, it's nasty because it's more energy on target.
Well, we can talk later.
Well, I understand all the other stuff too.
There's a very specific thing that happens.
Yes, I understand that, but
and
I'm
if
saying
it does that with
I'm
that,
saying term,
oh
terminal performance wise.
It's are we talking about internal ballistics?
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Gross, dude.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
It's disgusting.
Oh, dude, it's bad.
Yeah, AKs and ARs, right?
Well, so here's where people, like, for me, the way I think of it is this is where people actually should be debating. What people should actually be debating in our world, in our industry, isn't the type of tool, and it's not even the type of context. I'm sorry, it's not the type of technique. It's the context. That's what people ought to be looking at for things, right?
You can't do that though.
But
you can't argue about
not even techniques, because like people are like, well, I reload like this. Well, I reload like this. I'm like, I don't give a shit. Or some people are like,
I carry from this position to this thing and it works well.
Right.
Good.
Well, I like to draw from this. Well, I like to draw from that. I mean, I got into an interesting conversation with a very, very well known guy. In the industry, who's a very respected guy. He's a guy I respect as an instructor. His level of experience is beyond contestation. I mean, he spent more time in CAG than people spend in the military in a full freaking career. This guy has some experience, right?
Right.
We got into an interesting discussion about vehicle tactics, and we were discussing, and he was like, I can't believe all these people teaching standoff on vehicles is freaking bullshit. And I'm like, well, hey, bro, I teach standoff on vehicles. He was like, what? Why? Why would you do that? And I go, well, let's look at the context. Your technique is valid. How do I know your technique is valid? Because you used it a lot to stay alive. And you taught a lot of other people how to use it to stay alive. And you have been in way more bad situations than I have been. And apparently your shit works, right? Mm-hmm. So not just anecdotally, but over time, you have evidence-based research that shows, yes, your technique works. Mm-hmm. Well, let me tell you about my technique. I know with my evidence-based research that my technique works too, within context. What's the context of yours? Tell me when you would use your condition. He was talking about sucking up to a vehicle, mm-hmm. using a hubcap as cover, using cover. And I'm like, give me context of your situation. And he's like, well, like, you know, combat environment. And I go, okay, what's your range of engagement? He's like, outside of 100 meters probably. Mm-hmm. And I go, okay, so you're talking about sucking up to cover,
right,
for a 100 meter plus engagement. So you then going down on your side, feet up on the freaking, you know, wheel, rotating sideways in the urban prone, side prone, yeah, special boat prone, whatever the fuck you want to call it. And he's finally underneath and bam, 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 shooting, coming over junkyard prone, shooting over the hood, shooting over the trunk. That's all good stuff, man. Contextually, that's good stuff. Now, what I'm talking about is an armed citizen with a handgun,
or LA.
Yeah,
or LA, a law enforcement officer, LA, yeah, doing a traffic
Walmart
stop.
Walmart parking lot.
So right. I'm doing a traffic stop.
With Johnny and Susie in the minivan next door.
I stand. Yeah, exactly. I come back. Yeah. I check the dude out. I see he's moving around inside of his car. He steps out with a weapon. I don't care what it is. I've got my weapon, whatever it may be, carbine, handgun, shotgun, whatever. I need to get the fuck out of the vehicle. So I bail out of the vehicle and start fighting. What happens if I suck up to the vehicle? Well, I'll tell you, there's a lot of very beautiful, very touching law enforcement funeral services, yeah, that will show you what happens when a police officer sucks up next to a vehicle during a close quarters engagement.
Yeah.
It is so easy to flank somebody and so easy to get the upper hand on someone when they are sucked up to cover and you are literally within contact distance.
You're also looking at a one-man operation.
I'm also looking at a one-man operation as opposed to a team-based
operation. That's what I was talking about.
Absolutely.
It matters about the field of view, mm-hmm, that you have. 100-meter engagement, multiple people sucking up to cover, you're not going to lose any advantage.
No.
Rather than one-on-one, two cars in between, mm-hmm, mine and theirs. If I suck up, I'm losing field of view. Mm-hmm. It's harder for me to track.
No,
if I back up, someone moving left to right is smaller because of my view when I'm further away. And also, I want distance. I don't want to be up close. Mm-hmm. I really don't. Because being up close makes them more effective with, mm-hmm, whatever weapon they have, no matter what
and
it
all
is.
I'm really trying to do is keep a vehicle, an object, mm-hmm, lengthwise, hopefully, between them and me as I maneuver on them so, right, that their hits aren't as effective or effective at all as much as I can break free and kind of flank them and get out in the open. So, I mean, yeah, I want a minimum of a 6-foot standoff in a situation like that or more. Mm-hmm. You also got rounds skipping off a hood and smacking me in the head and all kinds of horrible shit, yeah, that happens with vehicle ballistics. So it's, yeah, like there's a lot of things that are going on around a vehicle if I'm going to be fighting someone around a vehicle as opposed to using vehicle as cover. There are two very different things. So after this discussion, I'm like, so how do you feel about that? He's like, well, we're talking about two different things. Yeah. And I go, I agree. But that's why, let's go back to your previous statement where you said, I don't understand why people are teaching students to suck up to cover. And now that we've had this conversation, you agree that they're two different things? Okay, so let me ask you this, man. When you're not teaching a pre-deployment to your JSOC buddies, who are you teaching?
Mm-hmm.
Cops? And regular dudes who want to come train with the Mighty CAG Warrior, right?
And you're teaching them military tactics.
And you're teaching them military tactics.
Don't work.
And I'm not saying that he's teaching them bad things within the context of why he's teaching it. But my point is, like,
application.
What's the caliber that they're going to use? I don't fucking care. What's the, right, did they use an AR for that or did they use an AK? Or
nobody gives a
nobody
shit.
Nobody cares. How did they reload? It doesn't matter, right?
No.
Debating all those techniques, like, look, find the most efficient and effective way to do whatever you need to do. Got it? Awesome. I've shown people so many different things in class over the years, and then people are like, but I like to do it like this. And I'm like, so wait, do that. I'm, yeah, not here to drill my concept into you.
As
I don't
long
really
as you're
care.
Safe, go for it,
do
man.
Do your thing, man. If, yeah, you can do it safely, efficiently, effectively, knock yourself, yeah, out, go for it, right?
Be the best of your abilities with whatever you got.
Go for it.
Mm-hmm. Do it.
So now we're looking at context of that's more what we should be debating in this industry. Unfortunately, ego keeps people from being able to debate that effectively.
Yeah.
I also think it's a lack of knowledge. Because if you look at the majority of people that are debating these things that we're talking about, AK sure. versus AR, 9mm versus 45, it's a lack of knowledge of everything else because they have that one anecdotal experience. Yeah. Or like Tom Gibbons said in class I took from him a few years ago, if you ever get a chance, I recommend it. It's worth the time and the energy. You'll pick something up. Everyone's a prisoner of their own experience. Mm. And I was like, huh, holy shit, you're absolutely right. You know?
Writing that down now.
Yeah. So, you know, it's you can't debate the things that you think we should be debating. We can have those intelligent discussions. Sure. You can have those intelligent discussions with other people in the industry. The average person that owns a couple of guns and has some body armor and has done a class or two doesn't have the same depth of knowledge to debate those things, nor are they interested in finding that depth of knowledge to debate those things.
I think most people are lazy. They just want to be told what to do.
Also.
So they're going to go to, you know, a guy with tons of experience. And they're going to go...
Or perceived
experience.
Yeah.
And the thing about that, even that perceived experience is understanding, again, the context under which that experience was obtained. Ryan has more experience kicking in doors and shooting bad guys in the face than I will ever probably fucking have, right? Because that's what did for the majority of his career in the military.
Yep.
All right, cool. Good shit. How Ryan kicks in the door and shoots bad guys in the face, physically meaning how he would shoot someone in the face, body area, whatever, does not change. No. How he did it in Iraqistan or how he does it in his home is there's nothing different about how he's going to line up his sights and appropriately press the trigger. Nothing different.
It also doesn't validate me to like letting me know that I know shit.
It also doesn't validate it, but here's why. Because if Ryan, so just the shooting part, like Ryan and I have discussed, that's skill level one. We expect anyone who's graduated basic training.
Brand new fucking privates.
To be able to line up the sights, press the trigger, and kill someone. So that's
a lot of expectations, but I agree with you.
It is a lot of expectations.
This is a rifle.
You'll never touch this. Okay, so for me, it's someone that's went through the pipe and went through our pipeline.
Right.
And we expect them to go out on target and shoot someone and kill them. That's a skill. It's
literally a skill level one skill test. Level I understand one. That. Skill level one it's right out of Warrior Handbook.
But you know what? People brag about it all the time.
Yeah.
It's like,
look at I was involved in this thing and look at all these people I shot. And I'm like, bro, gangsters do that. Uneducated crackheads do that.
People do it by accident.
People accidentally do that.
All the time.
Right? So if you're let's not get too excited about bragging on that. I'm a lot more interested. Like, so that's my point though, is like that skill set of how Ryan bang bang somebody there or Jenna freaking drop the hammer on some dude in his living room is not any different. That said, if Ryan lacks the ability, which he doesn't, that's why he works for us, if he lacked the ability to say, I don't know how to do that in my house because there I had a team, I had Nod, we were hitting a target, we knew roughly who was hostile and who wasn't, and we judged that a lot differently than how I'm going to do in the civilian world, and I had a team backing me up, and I had a combat load, and I had all these things going on versus Ryan tonight having to do that
in his underpants.
In his underwear, right, with his with his wife and his kid and everybody trying to figure out where all those pieces are, and he's trying to shoot and move and communicate with one dude.
I would
two dudes.
If someone was in my house with a gun and they had the intent to kill me and I tried clearing a room like I would when I was in regiment, I would be dead.
You'd probably get shot.
Unless I magically turned to the...
Unless you rolled the dice and turned left when you were supposed to turn left, you're fucked.
Yeah, knowledge is key. I mean, I didn't learn how to solo man clear until I went to ShivWorks class. That was great. And I learned a shit ton. It blew my mind.
Yep.
Takes a long fucking time.
Well, think about it from this perspective. Since Ryan's come to work for us with all his close quarters experience... Since Ryan's come to work with us, I mean, he just said it. He's learned more about that world than he ever even thought. He didn't even know he didn't know.
Yeah.
Right?
The civilian base in general, even the standoff that we talk about, like, I knew what standoff accomplishes. I knew the depth. I knew the angles. But I didn't put that into application because what I was used to is exactly what you're talking about, sucking up to cover. Because I was in a team-based environment. Most of those engagements when you have cover are going to be, at least in my experience, were 50-50 out. Everything else would be internal as far as a compound.
And even when you think about cover, right? And I'm using Ryan's experience as an example because he's the most recently separated out of all of us as far as military experience is concerned. So when you look at even the application of cover, I think about how I was taught to utilize cover from a military perspective how I was taught to utilize cover from a law enforcement perspective and how I'm taught to utilize cover from a civilian perspective. Mm-hmm. Or really, to say that better, how I've learned on my own how to utilize cover from a civilian perspective. Because the reality of a civilian engagement is, dude, if you're not behind cover when it starts, you're probably not getting behind cover.
Nope.
You're probably not going to be behind cover until it's over.
And you're
taking your quote-unquote tactical pause behind behind your cover. Now you're just catching your breath and checking for bullet holes and things like that because everything's over, dude. Yeah. If you don't get behind cover, it's probably not going to – it's going to end wherever it is, yeah. Right? Versus in a military engagement, we're like, hey, you're on patrol walking along. It's like zip, zip, zip. And you're like, oh, shit. We should find some shit to hide behind. You know what I mean? Then you go hide behind some shit.
Ever seen seven dudes get behind a rock star can?
Exactly. Yeah, you will.
I'm sure as shit seen them try.
So, yeah, all of a sudden, then bullets start flying. And you're like, oh, shit. Like, let's go here. Let's go there. Okay, now let's communicate. Yeah. Where's that fire coming from? All that kind of stuff. That is not what happens in a civilian engagement.
No.
Yeah, you don't get you don't get distance, direction, and let's see, distance, direction, and fucking. There's one more there. Anyhow,
three Ds: distance, direction, description.
Yeah. There you go. Description. That's the one I was missing. You don't have that opportunity as a regular dude.
5 second average, 5 second window.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
According to stats, very violent, very vocal.
Very fast.
So, you know, trying to prepare for that, it's going to have to be done up here in the head prior to, you know, the whole vehicle thing. Oh, goodness gracious. 5 seconds in a vehicle? You're outside a vehicle and the gunfight starts in a, you know, a fist fight may turn into a gunfight. That's not a lot of time.
And you're going to seek out a wheel for cover?
Yeah, no.
Come on.
No.
Probably not.
I got other shit that's way more important to do.
Exactly.
And so, again, it's the context of what we're learning. And those are the kind of things you're going to be debating. What caliber are you going to bring in this fight? I don't care.
What are you carrying?
Yeah.
What tools do you have?
Yeah, what do you have? Yeah.
Do you even have your pistol? Okay, cool. So we've debated this thing ad nauseum. We figured out the perfect pistol. We figured out the perfect caliber. We figured all the doodads we want attached to it, all the modifications we want to make to it. We've got the best trigger. We've got the best sights. We've got the best grip. We have all this. We finally built the perfect pistol.
Hmm.
Are you carrying it?
Well,
it's too big and heavy now.
Yeah, it's in my gym bag.
Yeah.
It's on my
I left it in my glove box.
Yeah.
Locked up.
It was kind of inconvenient.
You mean my AR pistol, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And that thigh holster you carry around with it.
You seen that shit?
Don't judge me. Oh, yes, I'm not kidding about that.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I'm not
kidding. I think it was at Starbucks or something. I'm just like...
Please don't do that.
See the one where you're killing it. Is it a pistol holster with the... what's it called? It's a pistol brace connected to a chassis for your pistol, and they're making holsters for it. So you get it out, and then you flip open your pistol.
I wish people would stop doing stupid shit.
And it's on the internet right now.
I'm sure they're selling them.
It's definitely selling.
I still think the two best holsters I've seen for shit were the upside down chancla.
Yep.
Upside down chancla.
Upside down and what? The cut off fucking cowboy boot.
Cut off cowboy boot.
Oh, I've seen the cowboy boot.
Yeah.
I want that.
That was an AR pistol.
I want that. Exactly.
Yep.
I want the flashlight as a submachine gun. It looks like the flashlight from the 80s. It's fucking huge.
Yep. Yep.
And you go into a submachine gun.
Yep.
No, it's
Magpul made that.
No, Magpul.
Oh, is that Magpul?
They only ever made that one, too.
It's FN.
I don't know what it was.
No, it's not made by FN, but it's called something like FMG. Or something like that.
I have no idea.
Folding machine gun or something. Yeah, it looks like a giant flashlight. You push the button.
It was like one of their giant, like one of the things that really put them on the map was the development of that.
I can't remember. Yeah, I can't remember what the whole project was.
They're also partially responsible for the ACR.
Yeah,
originally called the Masada.
Yep.
They are?
ACR.
The ACR.
No, I said they are?
Yeah, it was originally the Masada from Magpul.
Yep. Huh.
And then Remington purchased the design and created the ACR.
I'm sure.
Why would you do that, Remington? Why would you do so many things that you do, Remington? Why, why do you do this, Remington, to yourself?
Whatever.
But we want to manufacture ARs. Who should we purchase? What's a high-quality company? Fuck a high-quality company. What's a company we can get the cheapest? Bushmaster. Bushmaster. Oh, perfect. Perfect.
Bushmaster.
Yeah.
Now we're going to make the Bushing Marlington or whatever they call
the
it.
The Bushing Marlington.
Because now it's the Marlin Remington and Bushmaster combo. And now they also have Cibola Firearms and all these other freaking crazy combinations. But anyways, the idea here is like if anyone's going to be sitting debating anything, it's not even really debate worthy. It's just like understanding the context of what you're doing. When we talk about civilian survival of self-defense situations, and you go back and you study civilian self-defense situations, here's the interesting part about being an instructor who teaches civilian self-defense, right? Almost everything we teach is hypothetical. And here's why. All right. Because out of all the instructors I know, The highest speed freaking dudes. Dudes who have resumes make me look like a baby. All right? Amazing stuff. How many of them, inside their home, in a parking lot, in a civilian situation, as a civilian, not as some low pro operator or whatever, but as a actual no shit civilian, mm-hmm. have killed someone in self-defense?
I would say none.
I know
less.
One. I know one guy.
In Minnesota?
He's actually in Utah. Is there another one that I don't know about?
Maybe there's
Minneapolis,
two.
The guy in Minneapolis who was the three-gun competitor that...
Oh, shit, yeah. Who's also that's right. I remember
He's an NRA instructor.
That's right. Okay. So now I know two. He stopped an active shooter if I... Yeah.
Two out of food what? Court. Fucking how many of them?
Oh, hundreds.
Thousands?
Yeah. There's a guy in Utah who's an off-duty police officer, stopped an assault on him and his wife. He's a concealed carry instructor and like a defensive tax instructor. He has his own private company as well as doing that for his agency.
Okay.
And he's the only guy I know who actively teaches, and he runs regularly scheduled courses, not like once every in a blue moon, but he runs regularly scheduled courses. He's the only other guy that I know of, and I met him a couple times just by association, who stopped an assault on him and his wife. Some guy came at him in a parking lot. Came at his wife actually in a parking lot. I think his wife had left before him. He was checking out. He was putting the card away, something like that. And so there was a degree of separation between him, and someone tried to assault his wife. And then he showed up and was like, what's going on? And the guy turned around. He had a weapon or whatever. So the dude just freaking smoked him where he stood. Zero cool guy tactics were used. Mm-hmm. I remember talking to him about it. He just basically just drew his pistol and shot this dude like eight times in the chest.
No double knee slide? No combat roll?
Bullshit. Invalid.
Yeah, I can't even believe he managed to pull it off without a combat role. But anyways, like the point is
the only
is that
role in John Woo movies.
The reality is the majority of us who are teaching these self-defense tactics have never applied them under these specific circumstances. So how do we get the right knowledge? And I think that's always a question that ought to be asked when you're looking at these kinds of debates. Like, what's more important, AR versus AK? What's more important, 9mm versus 40? What's more important, red dot versus EOTech versus whatever? Okay, what's more important? Who are you taking advice from on that stuff? And what's their context to where they're drawing from? So if someone's like, you should come learn from me about defensive handgun because I was a 20-year Navy SEAL. And you're like, what does that have to do with carrying a gun as a civilian? I would rather someone go,
nothing.
You should come learn defensive handgun from me because I've been a concealed carrier for 30 years, 20 years, 10 years, whatever. I carry every single day. I teach in several different states. I regularly compete. I understand these things of the law. I have these kind of certifications. These are the things that make me a quote-unquote SME or subject matter expert on this particular topic. Also, here's all the studying that I've done, and here's the things that I know about your average engagement. I'm not just going to stick to the law of averages of threes, right? What is it, three feet, 3 seconds, three rounds or whatever? Yeah. I'm not just going
to
stick
to
that. Three to five, yeah?
Yeah.
It's like I'm not just going to stick to that. I'm going to go, okay, let's really study self-defense situation. Those are the kinds of people I will go learn from. I don't look at someone's resume when I'm going to learn from because I want to know about the context of what they're drawing from.
Also, and you kind of hit on this and we talked about it before, is what are you doing, not what you did?
Exactly. Yeah.
It's huge. I mean, as far as falling back on your resume from being in the military in whatever unit,
right?
It's boring.
Yeah.
It's overdone.
Yeah, well, that goes back to his anecdotal.
Yeah.
Staying anecdotal. I mean, us as instructors, if we're not constantly sharpening the iron, is what I like to say, and evolving our skills, how can we be the best? Because everything is evolutionary. Combat. I mean, think about concealed handgun, where that has come from.
Look at how it's evolved in the last 10 years, or evolved.
Absolutely, absolutely. And holsters, how has violence evolved in the last 10 to 15 years?
Mm-hmm. And what's the likely scenarios we might have to be dealing with? Right. So, 10 years ago, when I started doing this. An active shooter with a rifle wearing body armor in a public setting was not something short of North Hollywood, right?
Yeah.
Was not something that we really had to consider.
It was an anecdotal. It was an anecdotal thing at the time.
And while now
it was on the movie Heat,
and it was also Heat. Where's the van? Right.
I love that. I love that scene. They're in traffic and they're just in a fire.
They're just cutting it. They didn't even give a shit.
Val Kilmer.
Yeah.
His ponytail. Just killing it.
Rockman. So, hey, segue. Jason Falconer from Minnesota. He was
is that
a,
the guy?
Yeah,
because he was a three-gun
stabbing. Nine people were stabbed at this mall, and this guy is a gun range owner, an NRA instructor, and he was a cop. So
That was the guy. I do remember
that's the one that just happened.
16. That's 2016.
Yes, yeah, just a few years ago.
Jesus.
Yeah, I remember reading it because people were like contextualized. They were like, "See, competition shooting does work," and it's like that's not what we're drawing from. No, now obviously we're still big proponents of competition shooting, but it's like that's not necessarily what we're drawing from. The point is, the guy was out there keeping his sword sharp. So what did I say? His sword sharp. There we go. His sword
sharp. Sword
sharp. Hey, give me that phonics thing, right? Hook me up.
I'm laughing.
Sharp sword. It's on you now.
His sword sharp. All right, by shooting competition.
He kept an edge to his blade.
There you go. That's how I like that. There's no S's and H's in it. He kept an edge on his blade. That's better. That's easier to say.
There you go.
So the point is that, like, again, contextually, you should always be looking at what are you even debating? I'll have students who come into class, and they want to debate techniques with us. Well, I learned from so-and-so, and he showed me this, and then so-and-so showed me this, and now you guys are showing me this, and I go, okay, which one works better? Which one do you like more?
Well,
if you're what's your purpose? Okay, you're going for accuracy. Which one made you more accurate? Or are you going for speed? Which one made you faster? What are you going for, and what's helping you accomplish that result? Then do that. I don't care if I'm not teaching it to you. If you have a better way, do the other thing. I'm not going to sit here and beat you up over it. Just go do the thing that you enjoy doing. That's fine.
Yeah.
That makes you faster, more accurate, and that's the purpose of shooting. Then go ahead and do that. Because we're not here to debate specific technique. Yeah, we can show you techniques that make you efficient from our point of view. But look, man, if you got something else,
you've already
got
this figured out. Good for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you already got to go and do it. A lot of people don't come to instructors like us to necessarily learn how to shoot, right? Last week's show, I was mentioning, you know, the well-armed woman class we did, and we had this great variety of ladies. We had a dozen ladies out there, and all of them were good shooters. Several of them were competitive shooters. None of these ladies had major safety violations. None of them had any kind of...
We were just looking for that.
I didn't know how to get the gun out of the holster. These were not basic level shooters, right? They were doing a very good job. They understood their tools, understood that they were capable.
They were looking for that extra edge.
Reload. They wanted the edge. They came to us because they go, how do you apply this in this situation? Yeah. Contextually, right? Yeah, we go to ranges, we shoot at targets. We go to USPSA, we shoot at targets. How do we apply this contextually? We never talked about caliber.
No.
We never talked about magazine capacity. We never talked about brand. We never talked about any of that stuff. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's another one that people debate all the time. That's fucking useless. Brands.
Dude, how many people I guarantee you, Jennings?
High Point and Jennings have killed more people than Glock.
Taurus.
Phoenix Arms. Jimenez.
Phoenix Arms. Yes. Jimenez Arms. Oh, my God.
Llama?
Llama Arms. Still, yeah.
Star.
Franco.
Don't forget Branko.
Branko, yeah. One.
Yeah, it matters not. And
How many people are killed every day with those pieces of junk?
Yeah.
Because you know what? You press the trigger, it goes bang. One of my favorite freaking videos.
True story.
Here's the thing, man. You ever watch the guy, Matt, from Demolition Ranch?
Is this the one where he beats up that High Point?
Dude, he shoots it the chamber.
Yeah.
It peens the chamber. Or it peens the actual...
Yeah.
So that it won't open. He beats it open and then it fires runs. It and it continues to run. He's blown it up. He shot it underwater. He
left
buried it
in the water.
He left it in the water for, I don't know, 18 hours. Loaded. Yeah, pulls it out. Shoots it. I mean, it's insane. This gun, finally, he's like, I'm really trying to break this thing. He finally literally sets it up on a freaking log and shoots it with... I can't remember if he shoots it with another handgun or a rifle or whatever the hell he shoots it with.
Remember.
It peens the freaking barrel, so it peens the metal so much that the slide won't work. He finally forces the slide into operation by putting enough force on it that it folds the peen of the metal back, puts a gun in. The first couple are like,
yeah, you can watch it like super slow.
But then it gets enough force
it
in there.
It just grinds it down.
And then it's like 4 or 5 rounds later, he's boom, 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 boom with this gun again. And I'm like, dude, how many people every day, good or
bad? It's
like
a tank.
Are killed with that freaking gun. It's $160. I'm not advocating running out and buying a High Point, but what I am saying is, are we even debating shit that matters?
Are you gonna buy the skeet pistol?
Yeet cannon.
Yeet cannon.
Yeah.
Yeet cannon 9. You know, I'll tell you guys something. I've admitted this on the show before, and I'll admit it again. All right.
Is this about your carbine?
It is. In my gun safe, I have.
I thought you got rid of it.
I do. I did. I gave it to my dad. He shoots marmots and beavers with it now.
Perfect.
So, in my gun safe, cleaned. I have an amazing amount of firearms, and just because of my job and my hobby, I have some incredible guns, just some incredible pieces of equipment.
Yeah.
Also, in my gun safe, for many years, in the back, unused,
and untalked about,
and not talked about often, I had a high point carbine, one of those.
Like your retarded uncle.
I bought it. I bought it a long, long time ago. I think I paid $150 for it because at the time, my brother-in-law and I were shooting rabbits a lot, and we were shooting the 22s, and some of the distance we were getting, we weren't getting good kills on them. And then we bring out the big guns, and we were just exploding them. And it was very expensive to shoot them with our 270s and our 243s. So we're like, you know what, man? We want something in between. I was in the gun store, and I saw this thing. I'm like, that thing shoots 9mm? Shit, that's cool. Like, I just want you to shoot rabbits. And the guy's like, hey, they run. They're reliable. I didn't know anything about them. I bought it for like $150.
It looked like a laser
blast. This was back in the day when you could go up and you could buy 1,000 rounds of jacketed hollow point for like $90. It was insane how cheap ammo was back then. I wish if I had a time machine, I'd go back and just buy ammo. But
yeah, I'd have a warehouse.
We went out and we bought these. We bought ammo and we just freaking shot these carbines. Man, we killed so many rabbits and coyotes and all kinds of stuff with these little guns.
Who made the carbine again?
Which the one? High Point. It's the High Point carbine. Yeah, it's like $150, right? Yeah. And this is it's a long like time.
$300 now.
Yeah, they're a little more expensive now.
It's how
and
much?
We shot
I think
it.
Like 300.
Dude, we
like
shot them and shot them. So you're not. This thing is put together so awkwardly that you're not even supposed to disassemble it for maintenance.
That's true.
If anything happens with the gun, you literally ship it back to High Point. They don't even fix it.
They just send you a new one.
It is an unconditional lifetime warranty. And if you have to do that, they also send you an extra mag for the trouble. Like I had a problem with mine one time. I couldn't get the sight to work properly. It was mostly my fault actually. And they were like, hey, for the trouble, they sent me an extra magazine, like 10 round magazines. Not even that many rounds, but dude, it's great for shooting rabbits. I put thousands of rounds. At the time, a buddy of mine was working at Gunsight, and they had this a whole bunch of foreign nationals come through, and they were all using Wolf steel-cased ammunition.
Yeah.
And hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of rounds that they were doing malfunction clearances on, left all this ammo behind. He literally brings me a five-gallon bucket full of steel-cased Wolf ammo.
That's been picked full, up out of the
that
dirt.
Was picked up off the dirt. Some of it is like dirty, gross, nasty stuff. I'm talking the old steel case nasty stuff, the lacquered shit and everything. Some of the green case lacquered shit. I shot every – I don't even know how many rounds fits in a five-gallon bucket. But I shot all of it through that freaking gun.
Wow. Did you just spray lube in it? That's about it?
I just hosed it down with lubricant and kept her going. I had this little fixed four-power scope on it, man. It was such a blast. Finally set it back in my safe. Forget about it. My dad up in Colorado, he's shooting freaking marmots and beavers at insane distances because he's an insane shooter with his 45. And he's like, ah, it's getting kind of hard to see my eyes, blah, blah, blah. So I'm like, dude, I have the perfect gun for you. I give him this gun. He's like, oh, this is amazing, man. He's just shooting marmots and beavers with it like crazy. And he loves it, right? It was $150, man.
Yeah.
And it's still running like a top. It's still zeroed, like a tie. It's still super accurate.
And it'll still put a hole in you.
If I had to use it defensively, it would still put 10 very quick holes into somebody.
Yep. I'm just kind of confused that you can't disassemble it to clean it or anything.
No.
No, because the action is one part.
Yeah.
The action is an entire part.
Dude,
you can pull the stock off the action, but you're not supposed to take the action.
There's
part.
Entire boards and forums dedicated to modding these
they
things.
They literally have like a High Point forums.
Dude, they're.
Yeah. It's like a whole thing, dude.
It's a thing, bro.
It's insane. But my point is, all I've ever done is lubricate this thing and run a boar snake down it when I remembered.
Sometimes.
And I put a 5-gallon bucket full of range pickup Wolf lacquered steel case freaking ammo on it.
Yeah.
And it ran all that. And all the cheap S&B jacket all points I used to buy for freaking shooting rabbits. And that thing's killed so many freaking critters, rabbits, coyotes, everything. That thing's a bananas. I'm not saying you necessarily need to run out and buy one, but I'm saying for $150, let's talk about context. Who do you want to face down? A guy who's got a $150 carbine, a couple $100 worth of training, some really good experience, knowledgeable violence in his heart. Would you want to face down that guy? Or do you want to face down the bullet golfer with a $3,000 AR who never does anything but go out and shoot some matches?
Is it the one that kind of looks like a shotgun?
It looks retarded. Just Google High Point.
It looks like a space gun.
It looks like a pistol.
It looks like a laser blaster.
It looks like a ugly space gun.
It looks like a POS, and it shoots.
Dude. It
runs like a boss.
My point is, like, contextually, I did a video about this.
$300 now, I think.
What with, I think on our alumni page, on the Independence Training Facebook alumni page. I'm pretty sure I did this video where I broke down, like, oh, I did. I did a video about, like, kind of being a little more humble and kind of act like you've been there before, and about people telling people that stop being poor and that their shit is dumb and shitting on new shooters because they can't afford the best stuff. Like how ridiculous that is. It's not beneficial or helpful for anybody. And part of the video was me also breaking down, like, if I had $1,000 to spend, I would rather get like a $300 pistol and this much in ammo, blah, blah, blah. And I broke it all down. Then I did the same thing with a carbine. It's like, look, man, I would rather have a student. If a guy came to me and said, I have $1,000, bro, what should I do? Most people are going to be like, $1,000 pistol, that's what you should do.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, spend a couple hundred, get a Taurus for all I care, right? Get a holster, get a bunch of ammo, get some training.
Used Glock.
Get a police training Glock for $300.
Don't buy a Taurus with adjustable sights. Buy one with fixed sights.
Yeah, they suck.
Their adjustable sights are shit.
But it's like, really? Buy a cheap gun, get good training, because I would rather have that guy in my squad, on my team, on my side, than the guy who's like, oh, look at this cool Gucci Glock I have, and I don't really have any time to do any training. Oh, I don't really have the money. Cerakoted. Yeah, oh, dude, check out all this cool shit. And you're like,
and it's stippled.
But how well can you shoot it? And do you know why it's stippled? Do you know why they did the grip reduction on? Do you even understand the function behind what's happening here? Yeah. No, but it looks badass for, you know, the pictures on Instagram.
Doing it for the goals is the thing I should be more concerned about. $350 used Glock. All right, and hopefully he can get some couple mags with it.
Yeah,
and 1,000 rounds of 9mm, and a full day of training with the right instructor, it's going to make him live longer.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get Brian back on the show talking about Gucci guns.
I know, he was a good time. So, anyways, the point is we got to wrap the show up. But the point is, guys, if you're going to find yourself in a debate with someone, debate things that actually matter. If you've got someone that wants to debate ARs versus AKs, 9 versus 40, I mean legitimately, not just jokingly, but you've got someone who legitimately wants to discuss which of these tools is better, find an exit out of the conversation. Because like Dad said, the problem with arguing with an idiot is that people watching can't tell the difference.
Well, they drag you to the level and beat you with experience as well.
Or that too. So be careful about what you debate. So there you go.
My closing comment is surrender your ego for knowledge.
Oh, God.
There you go.
I can't beat that.
There it is.
I didn't say that. But somebody else did. Yeah. I just learned it the other day.
All right, guys. Remember, you can bring us out to train with you. Get hosting information via email, info@trainingaz.com. Remember to follow us on Facebook and Instagram as The Arms Room Show, Independence Training, Red Wire Gear, C2 Tactical with Steven, and also Patriot Outdoors. Make sure you give all those companies a follow if you're not following us already. We're proud members of the Heroes Media Group. Remember to check out all the other shows that they have. Shows from all kinds of things. They've got religion shows, sports shows, investing shows, business shows, all kinds of stuff. I think we're still the only gun show.
Yeah, I think so.
We better be. Adam, we freaking better be. As far as I know, we are. And we're still one of the top shows, if not the top show.
Yep.
God bless America. Next week, you guys, we're going to have Rebecca from Amped Up on the show with us talking about saving your hearing.
Oh, cool.
And doing it. What?
Hey. What are we talking about?
Saving your hearing with her custom-made ear protection and the kind of impacts that shooting can have on your hearing if you're not using the right hearing protection, because there is a big difference between various different types of hearing protection. All right, guys, until next time, stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.